Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Kia ora, welcome to Eco Living in Action on Otago Access Radio, ko Maureen Howard Ahau. I'm an eco-educator based here in Dunedin. Now, this is a bit sad because this is my last week hosting Eco Living in Action, for a while at least. Now, the show started in 2012 with a focus on the everyday things that we can do to make a difference to live more sustainably on our earth. There have been a multitude of topics, from rearing nappy-free babies to growing native trees with gorse to how to make your own beer the eco-friendly way. And I've been continually impressed and inspired by the different passions my guests and have had, and it's been an honour to interview them and to learn from them. Although Dunedin is my home and focus, I've also had shows from quite a few locations in the world, including Colombia, Ireland and the US. And that happened because Otago Access Radio helped me to continue the show during my 2 years overseas when I did some fly-less travelling. But what I'm going to miss the most about coming is actually coming here most weeks to the Otago Access Radio studio. The staff have become my friends and they've made it so easy for me to do a show. So thank you so much to Leslie, the two Jeffs and to Domi for your support and your good cheer and for coming to my rescue, Jeff, at all those times when I pressed the wrong buttons during live shows. So I'm also very grateful to the financial support of my sponsors over the years, the Dunedin City Council, Sustainable Dunedin City and Taste Nature. And of course, I'm very grateful to you listeners for tuning in and downloading the podcasts. And so thank you very much for sticking with me. 7 years on from when my show first started, my focus is still on the things that we can do to live lightly on the earth as well as regeneratively. And although I'm going to take some time out from Eco Living in Action, I'm still going to be very active doing workshops and writing on environmental issues. And I do love radio, so I hope to be back on air again someday. Now, for this show, I wanted to chat about something that you can do that might take you just 15 minutes and that will help our climate. And that is submitting on the Zero Carbon Bill. Actually, the bill is called the Climate Change Response Zero Carbon Amendment Bill. And submissions are open now, closing on the 16th of July. Submission writing might not sound like the most fun thing to do, but it is important and it doesn't need to take much time at all. And I also love that very satisfied feeling that you get when you press the send button. So here on the phone to talk with me today around Zero Carbon Bill and to help us to do our submission painlessly is my guest Adam Curry from Generation Zero Dunedin Branch. Generation Zero are a youth-led organisation trying to help us to make the transformation to a low-carbon future. They're widely regarded as the group that wrote the initial draft of the Zero Carbon Bill that the government then used and adapted. Adam is the co-convener of Generation Zero Dunedin and Zero Carbon Act convener, as well as an active member in other groups. He's also a student at the University of Otago studying politics and arts. So welcome to the show, Adam.
So thank you for having me.
Yes. So you probably missed the introduction, Adam, but I'm very interested to know. So can you tell us what this new bill covers? So this Climate Change Response Zero Carbon Amendment Act bill, like what are its main things and what's it hoping to achieve?
Yeah, well, the Zero Carbon Act it's actually originally an act that was written by a bunch of New Zealanders 2 years ago when we sort of thought, right, the current political paradigm is failing us and we need a new, you know, piece of overarching climate legislation for New Zealand. And so the Zero Carbon Bill started as that, as sort of a movement of young people around New Zealand, you know, asking for a new climate change law to be given. And then the government obviously picked it up and changed it a little bit. And it's currently going through Parliament. But effectively what it does is it sets New Zealand on a path to be net zero by 2050. And that's done through establishing an independent climate commission, which will sort of, you know, hold the government to account on climate change. It'll establish a regular emissions budget so that every 5 years the government, you know, the government can be held to account on how they're doing on emissions. And it also is important for obligations under the Treaty of Waitangi and other those sort of things. So it does all those little things. But there's currently a couple of issues with the bill, which is why we're trying to encourage as many people to submit on it as possible.
So a bit of a change. Now, it's actually part of another bill now, because originally when it was put forward, it was going to be its own bill, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. We did ask for it to be its own bill, because if nothing else, the whole point of zero carbon is that it's non-partisan, right? It's overarching. It's not a Green Party thing or a Labour Party thing or a National Party thing. It's overarching and it goes over everything else. And it's not how we do the emissions. It's not like how do we, you know, cut methane, how do we cut, you know, factory emissions. It's about the overarching cross-party aim that we need to do something about it. And that's why we asked to get its own bill. That's going to be happening. And technically it doesn't actually make a difference, really, in terms of physical, technical stuff, but it does adapt this bill into the existing legislation, which makes it a lot easier to be tweaked or changed by a later on government, whereas if it was its own separate bill, it would have a lot more sort of a stigma of non-partisanship around it that it doesn't currently have.
Right, okay. But hopefully we can make this a very lasting act when it comes in, yes. So Generation Zero, there's a number of things that you would like to see people, I guess, support in the bill. Can you help us go through some of the things that you have picked out that you think are particularly important?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that we're sort of focusing on is enforceability, right? The bill needs to not be a wavy around doing nothing. It needs to be enforceable, and it needs to be wide-ranging across all government sectors. So currently we won't get too legalistic about it, but there's a current clause in the bill which pretty much says that it states outright this bill is not enforceable, and all a court can do is make a declaration that the government's failed, right? So we're currently asking the Select Committee of the Environment Select Committee that's going through to get rid of that clause, which will enable courts to, ideally we'd like a clause in there saying it is enforceable, but we know that's not realistic in the current political environment. So if we get rid of that clause, it'll give courts the ability to sort of make their own interpretation and give the courts the ability to really hold the government to account instead of just making some wavy declaration. Another thing we're asking for is the targets are currently very weak, especially on methane. So currently there's a 10% emission reduction target of methane by 2030. So that's nothing, right? We need legislation that's actually in line with the IPCC's 1.5 degree report, which calls for far more ambitious than that. And the third thing is just sort of a focus on, we can talk about 2050 till the cows go home, right? But at the end of the day, that's another 30 years away. What really matters is the emissions we cut now, right here, today. Because, you know, as big as emissions are cumulative, right? If we cut emissions to like 10% of the levels right now, and then the next 40 years don't really matter, right? Because what really matters is how fast we've been the curve right now in the next 5 years. So the close targets, especially by 2030, needs to be far stronger, both in methane and in long-lived gases like nitrous oxide and carbon dioxide and that sort of thing.
Yes, because, well, you know, if we follow the IPCC, the number that's widely touted is 11 years, you know, that we have to make some serious changes. And some people even say it's less than that. And that we actually have to be getting to this or having our emissions in 11 years. So the methane, it is a particular thing, although it has kind of like it breaks down quite rapidly. It's very, very intense, isn't it? And it's really these next few years that we really need to be setting in place these changes because of, I guess, positive feedback loops, melting of permafrost and so forth.
Absolutely, yes. So because of the complexity of methane, because it reacts so differently to carbon dioxide, there's a lot of different arguments can be made. It's a lot easier for, you know, industrial lobbies, particularly agricultural lobbies, to sort of make it seem like we don't need to do anything. But as you just said, exactly, that feedback loops are really important. And the thing is that however long the emissions last, what really matters is the tipping points, right? The emissions we create today, that causes tipping points that have, you know, flow-on effects. As you said, permafrost is released, ice shelves are dropped, sea ice decreases, and then that itself continues to warm up the climate. So it's not just about the exact number of years that gas is going to be in the atmosphere. It's actually about far more than that. And also, like, agriculture is 50% of our emissions right now, right? So without reducing agriculture, we can't reduce our emissions. Half of our emissions profile, the biggest in any country in the world, is still agriculture. So it needs to be, far more emissions than a tiny 10%. Right, the IPCC says we need 50% reduction of all emissions by 2050. We're not advocating for 50% on methane specifically because we can go further on carbon, but it needs to be a lot stronger than 10%.
Right. It would be wonderful if some farmers, and I have spoken to some farmers who really are taking this into consideration, these regenerative farmers who are really looking at building soil carbon. So it'd be great to hear more from them.
Exactly. And farmers' voices need to be a really important part of the conversation, right? Because it's not a just transition that's going to take everyone along with us. So that's what the Zero Carbon Act's always been about. It's about bringing everyone together, bringing farmers together, and acknowledging that we can't just say one group, like good farmers, always represents all farmers all the time. It's about listening to the individual voices of farmers and what they want. And what they want a lot of the time is certainty, right? Farmers, and this is the same with industry, they want to know where they can put their investments right now up to the date 2050. They don't want tomorrow the government to come up and announce some in a year's time, with 5 days notice, suddenly announce a big new emission trading scheme. They want certainty, and that's why we need a long certainty, ambitious, but we need to set targets now so that they can start investing into clean energy.
Right, yes. So that is probably part of the reason that quite a few other industries are actually really quite keen to get a clear indication from the government, that this is what's going to happen and this is what we need to do, and so that, then they've got that certainty. Now, one thing, is I'm interested in is biodiversity, because that is our other huge global issue, and the huge amount of biodiversity loss. So I'm keen to see that biodiversity and reforestation with natives is part of that. But what's your position on that with Gen Zero?
So, if we go into a niche, our niche hasn't traditionally been focusing on biodiversity as part of the Zero Carbon Act, but Forest and Bird actually has made an amazing submission, a really strong submission with really concrete ways biodiversity can be incorporated into the Act. And we're supportive of that at the moment, so we're talking about that, which is effectively saying that native plants and animals, the places they live, are under stress of sea level rise, and we need to take that into account with climate change, right? Because things like, we were currently, there's a lot of issues right now. For example, there's no actual cap on emissions offsetting, right? So we could effectively have no emissions at all and just blaze the entire New Zealand with pine forest, right? And that would solve our emissions reduction target through the absorption. But that obviously has massive implications for just transition and sustainability. And healthy forests absorb twice as much carbon as unhealthy forests do. Right, so biodiversity and climate change are often they're painted as being against one another. You're building a windmill on a forest or whatever, but in the grand reality of things, in the grand scheme of things, they actually complement each other. You can't have serious climate reductions without healthy forests without a healthy environment.
Yes, and the the native forests, because they will tend to be permanent forests. We're actually storing that carbon rather than, with the Pinus radiata, eventually it does get chopped down again, is usually the picture. And then
exactly. And that's the thing, right? That's the whole, currently, there's not only is it a limited emissions offsetting, they've set no way about for what, that still will help the trees have been cut down and burned, So you do need to acknowledge that. And at the end of the day, emissions, while trees are great for emissions offsetting, you've got to remember that, number one, the ocean also absorbs half the carbon as well. And you've got to remember that, number two, we need actual real emissions cuts instead of just using trees all the time, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Now, there's another, perhaps another thing that's absent from the bill, and that is to do with international aviation. Now, I know that that's a huge issue, and we don't really have an international agreement on that. But what have you got solutions? Because aviation is growing so rapidly, and at the personal level, it's kind of like the single biggest thing that we can do, in terms of flying or not choosing not to fly. So what position is Gen Zero hoping to achieve on that?
So there's only so much Zero Carbon Act can do in itself, which is that we are advocating that, in terms of carbon offsets, right, we're allowing carbon offsets, and that will contribute to aviation. If you're flying from New Zealand to Australia, right, you currently, you know, no one doesn't count under anyone's trading scheme. So after the zero carbon, there will actually be a big revamp to the emissions trading scheme that's coming up. And as part of that, we're focusing on asking for, you know, aviation to be part of New Zealand's emission trading scheme, and to include all of it, because otherwise it's just carbon leakage that's going out into the market, and it does need to be part of the emissions trading scheme. But that is a separate bill to the Zero Carbon Act. But it's still, as you said, really important, right? You know, New Zealand, our two biggest industries are agriculture and tourism. And as we adapt to climate change, we've talked about how agriculture is going to be affected, and, you know, how do tourists arrive in New Zealand? They come from planes. So the sooner we begin thinking about this, the sooner we're going to need to adapt to it, because it's going to require, you know, massive, massive changes on our own economy, you know, when we stop flying all these tourists into New Zealand all the time.
But domestic aviation will be part of it, isn't that right?
So domestic aviation will be part of it, absolutely. And, and also, like, the smaller, it's interesting about how we reduce emissions as well. This morning, you know, in New Zealand, another thing seen has just been on RNZ about how they've just stopped, and big announced that they've stopped importing newspapers into their coal lounges. Apparently it's going to decrease their carbon emissions. And it's just like, you know, an aviation industry like in New Zealand, the amount of emissions you cause in a plane, you know, it's just ridiculously high compared to a newspaper and a coal lounge, right? So it's about still like saying, hey, yeah, Edison's this amazing sustainability company. It's about looking at what is air travel and how can we decrease air travel and how can we be more smart about it in the transition to, you know, low carbon transport.
Absolutely. And if we do make that commitment, then these solutions start to appear. Like, for example, I can think of one really good example, which is here at the Otago Polytechnic. Every staff, every 5 years, they can, if they choose, they can take, they don't get paid for it, but they can take a year off and still keep their job. And I see it as a way that perhaps you could do slow travel, perhaps we could bring back passenger ships, or you could head off on a freighter ship and you could still, you know, come back and keep your job. And it could be that we design different ways to explore the world, you know.
Absolutely. And there's no reason why we have to sort of continue to have the same idea that love miles and, you know, flying to England to see your loved ones all the time. It's like, you know, if you really love them so much, maybe not live so far away from them. We can't just expect to be able to fly across the world, you know, so a few, you know, the rich Western society can fly across the world and see their family and go on holidays, while, you know, thousands and thousands of people in the Pacific Islands right now are having their homes flooded. And the real repercussions of the nice, smart, easy travel we have right now is causing, you know, horrors for so many people. So it's really something that we need to adapt to, like, right now.
Yeah. I think it's just that it's been there, and so we take it for granted as kind of like a right. But I know, anyway, but we're all in this situation together, so I guess we've all got to try and find a way out of it together as well, you know. What would be the vision? Like, let's say we get a good bill, like, what good things do you see coming out of it?
So if we get a bill that, as you say, is truly ambitious, it's in line with 1.5 degrees, and that is enforceable, all hope. And the right now, it's supported by all parties in Parliament apart from ACT, and 119 out of 120 MPs. So ideally, we'd end up with a bill that's really concrete, really robust, and has cross-partisan support. And what that does is, it does, right, both technically, it, you know, sets the 5-year emissions budgets. It means the governments are accountable to them. It will mean that governments, you know, will have to face up and say, and governments will have to, if a 5-yearly emission budget says the government's failed in the emissions reductions, the government will quickly have to front up and produce a report as to why that is. So it puts accountability on politicians. It makes politicians accountable to the people, and it will, and then it will also provide a framework to say climate change isn't a political issue, it's a political issue, and it'll sort of set us on a path for governments to make their own decision on how they're going to make those emissions reductions internally. But they'll have a framework, they'll have some guiding piece of legislation that tells them what they should be doing, how much they should be doing it, instead of just guessing and going on their polls or what the voters think. And, you know, it'll actually give a real concrete emissions reduction scenario and that they've committed to.
Yeah, so it'll be good for government too, and any new government that comes in, you know, it gives that, Yeah, and it, I guess a place of an action that they feel they can follow, and they've got the will of the people. So now, so let's say people are motivated, hopefully, who are listening. How can they go about and make their submission?
So there's two ways you make a submission. So you can make a submission directly, which is the best way, on the Parliament website. So just Google Zero Carbon Bill Parliament, whatever, it'll come up. And you can make a submission up to the 16th of July. So you can either write your own submission, make whatever you want. You can go on lots of different websites. Generation Zero, we have our own submission template that you can copy, your bullet points you can use if you want to, which is on zerocarbonacts.nz. But there's also just talking about telling everyone's personal stories about why climate change is really important to them. You know, writing why it's important to you, writing you want the bill to be really ambitious, writing you want it to be enforceable, and as you said before, writing that you want nature to be a part of the solution.
Right.
And that was, for the committee. And the other important thing that people should do is tick the I want to present orally to select committee box. And that's for a bunch of reasons. Number one, it's just to be straight up, it's far more effective if you do present your submission orally to the committee. It has carried far, far more weight. It has a face to the words. But even if you don't, actually want to submit orally, it's worth doing because first of all, you can't change your mind. I mean, you can't change your mind if you say no. So if you say no and then suddenly you go, your fingers are smooth and you go, actually, yes, I want to. It's too late. But you can always say no. So you can always say, yes, I want this for orally, and then change your mind later on. So it gives you flexibility of what you want to do later on. And finally, the Select Committee have said if enough people tick the box that they want to submit orally, they'll travel around the country.
Uh-huh.
So if enough people come to that's a really important part. If enough people come to lead and say, yes, I want to select orally to Select Committee, if they don't, that will mean that hopefully Select Committee will travel down to Dunedin, hear submissions in Dunedin, which not only makes it easier for people to hear the submissions, it makes a lot more. It means that, the MPs are putting more resources into the carbon bill, thinking about it more, talking about it more, and that's only a good thing, right?
Right. Oh, yep. Oh, gosh, I put mine in yesterday. I wish I'd ticked that yes button.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, right? If you tick it, you can change your mind. You find out random things about this later on. So it's always good to push the tick yes button and say no later on if you need to.
Right, yes. And even if they don't come around, I think you can do a phone-in submission as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you can phone in, you can video in submission as well, which is also really good.
Right.
Yeah, and that also carries a lot of weight as well on video.
Yeah. Oh, well, look, I hope that lots of people are listening and that are putting in their submissions, because it really is, in part, it is a numbers game and just showing that we really are interested and passionate about this and want the government to take action. So
I think action is the key word in that, right? As Greta Thunberg proponent said, our house is on fire. I don't want you guys to act as if it's a nice or another little problem we've got. We want to act like you would in a crisis, to act as if your house is on fire, because it is on fire right now, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to take that action and adopt this really strong instrument framework now.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, thank you. Thank you, Adam. Thank you so much for coming on the show. All the best for Generation Zero and for what you're doing. We're really grateful. And
thank you, and all the best for your future. It's your last show, is really sad.
No.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening. This is Eco Living in Action on Otago Access Radio, and I'm Maureen Howard, and today I've been chatting with Adam Curry from Generation Zero about the Carbon Zero Act. So if you'd like to listen to that show again, which you might want to, so you can get all the details, you can download it from the Otago Access Radio website at oar.org.nz. Thank you again for listening, and hasta la vista.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. As they affect our city, Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to sustainabledunedincity.org.nz.
yellow.